I'd like to thank you for that uplifting song, and I know that our brother desires to be lifted up in your prayers as he comes, and he is prepared for the service this evening. He has a pretty big duffel bag behind me. I don't know if I should be worried about that, but I'm sure we're actually going to enjoy his sermon this evening, and I know that our brother works hard in the world out there, but I also know that he works hard, and he desires to work hard for the Lord, so at this time, I would ask that you be thoughtful and prayerful for him, and I'll give you our elder brother, Andy Brown.
Thank you, Gary. I was telling Gary before we got started up here, I said, you know, some sermons, they just kind of flow, you know, when you're preparing them, and other ones, you're just scratching your head thinking, gee, I wonder what this sermon is going to be about. This is one of those sermons. I do have a big bag up here. And I love it because it's a curiosity factor. And I do hope that I can communicate what I have on my heart tonight in a way that would be acceptable to the Lord and something that we can gain from. I'm going to start by dragging this bag over here and opening it up. It's a little bit deceptive. It's not much in it. But it's going to kind of set the tone. It's not alive, I promise. Tonight, I intend on getting on my soapbox. And probably staying there more than you'll like. But I've been thinking about this for a long time. And I was walking through Home Depot yesterday, and there it was, a good stout soapbox. Because I'm thinking I'll have to get my shop and make one, and there's a nice stout soapbox I can stand on. Can anybody tell me where that saying came from? Is everybody, I know you can, Deb, you help me look it up. anybody knows where, does everybody understand what that term is? You know, we hear people say, get off of your soapbox, or he's on his soapbox again, literally. Anybody? About 1870s in England, they delivered soap and other products in a wooden crate. And at that time, in the political part of London, and they didn't say what group of people it was, whether I imagine it was the less affluent. Anyway, they'd be packing their crate, their soap box down the street to deliver their goods, and they would put it down on the ground and stand on it and just arbitrarily deliver some kind of message, whether it be political. And it became a fairly common way that preachers would preach on the street, standing on a soapbox. And I thought, well, that's appropriate. So your preacher tonight may stand on the soapbox. I struggle sometimes with my own thoughts, I'm sure as all of us do, and my thoughts concerning the gospel and where I'm at in my life and where you all are in your life and where we are as a church. I'm probably less quick to pat myself on the back or pat us on the back as a church and more quick to be critical because that's my nature, as all of you know. And so I fight against that critical nature I have, but at the same time, I try and evaluate the facts. And so I really, the whole purpose of my sermon, which we could probably get in the next 5 minutes and I could sit down, shut up, and we could go home. And there's probably some votes for that. But my whole purpose for my sermon this evening is I want to make you think. Zach, I want to make you think. Okay. I want to make you think. And I want you to ask yourself this question to start with as we cover some different items, some different attributes of a Christian's walk. Are you passionate or are you complacent? And I'm guessing every one of us will fit into that somewhere from being totally passionate to being totally complacent. Where are you at in your Christian walk, in your walk with the Lord? Is it complacency or are you passionate? And we can all think of different individuals. And it was kind of a strange thing. You know, sometimes in life you do something, and even as you walk away from it, you're thinking, I should have said something to that person. Because here I'm mulling this sermon over in my mind, walking through Home Depot, not really looking for a prop. I was actually looking at doors. And I come across this big stack of these boxes full of soap. And I'm thinking, I wonder if anybody see me take these six soaps out of here and set them somewhere else, and I'll snag this box. Well, about that time, here comes this young lady with a Home Depot thing on, and I said, hey, I got a strange question for you. She said, what's that? I said, I'd like to have one of those boxes. Okay. I said, help me unload the things out. Give me the box. I said, I want to use it for a prop. She said, oh, okay. Well, I head towards the garden department, and as I'm walking that way, I should have said, what an opportunity. I missed that opportunity. And I almost turned around, walked back, and found her. If you want to see what prop I'm going to use this for, come to church with me tomorrow night. Do we seize those opportunities? Are we passionate about the gospel, or are we complacent? In my sarcasm in the past, I've said, you know, sometimes the Church of Christ is almost a private club. You got to be born into it, or you got to marry into it. That's it. Which we all know is not true. But in my critical nature, sometimes I feel that way. And I want to encourage you, I want to encourage me, to live more passionately. And in order to do that, we're going to have to be willing to carry our soapbox with us and whip it out and get on top of it and proclaim what you know to the people you run into. We need to be willing to carry that around with us and seize the opportunity in a room full of strangers if it's there, you know. So just those last two things I mentioned here, you know, I want you to think. I want you to ask yourself the question, are you passionate about the gospel or are you complacent? And, you know, and I'll be honest with you. Try and look at yourself as others look at you. I have oftentimes in my prayers asked the Lord, help me see myself as you see me, as the Lord sees me. Because it's real easy for me to walk in there and look in the mirror and think, yeah, a pretty good-looking guy. He likes to help people. He works hard. He must be a good Christian, huh? Wrong. Okay, I'm judging myself by my own thoughts. That's called deception. We need to be able to look at ourselves as the Lord looks at us. Compare ourselves in life, as we all realize that have gotten a little bit older. This old life's passing away real quick, isn't it? And our health and our strength is passing with it. And as we come this evening, I just really want to touch base on, I don't know, a half a dozen different things that hopefully we're committed to. Hopefully we're convicted of, and we take a close look at who we are. We're going to start in Matthew in, I fibbed to you, I'm sorry. We are going to go to Matthew in a minute. Third book of Nephi, chapter 12. Getting started off good. I'm sorry. Chapter 13, verse 11, it says, we'll see if I'm true. Verse 11 says, and it came to pass that when Jesus had ended these sayings, he said unto his disciples, enter ye in at the straight gate, for straight is the gate, and narrow is the way that leadeth to life, and few there be that find it. But wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to death, and many there be that travel therein, until the night cometh wherein no man can work. And I started here because this scripture and the next two scriptures I read really is about your commitment. Are you passionate about your commitment? The commitment you've made to the Lord in the waters of baptism. Have you made that commitment? I hope so. And he says something here that I hope that each of us kind of grasp hold of, and that says, you know, few there be that find it, but broad is the way that leadeth to death. Broad's the way. You know, I know there's struggles in our life today. There's struggles for young people. There's struggles for old people. That's the nature of life. And when we begin to accept those things that are accepted in the world, then the way is getting broad for us. If we can look at our neighbor, if he's not in the church, and we look at the guy down the street and the guy we go to school with, and in my case, the guys I work with, listen to how they talk, listen to what they talk about. Jared, is those guys' conversation good all the time? No. Sometimes not too bad. But, yeah, most of the time I don't bother getting involved in their conversation. One, because I don't have time, but two, I just am not interested. But they need to see something different in us. Broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and narrow is the way that leadeth to life. There's difficult opportunities. There's a man that I work with fairly closely. He's actually my customer. He's a representative of my customer. And he's an old construction worker, a little rough around the edges. I believe to be a decent man. Grew up as a Christian believer. You know, his language is not the best, and sometimes he loses his cool and stuff. But, you know, those guys like that that I'm put in that situation with are probably the toughest for me to be a witness to. I have no problem with being an example to him, but to really come out and have a heart-to-heart discussion with, it's awkward for me because he's my customer. I don't want to offend him. I've thought that business isn't always the best place. Yesterday I was working, and we worked way late into the night on Friday night, and then again yesterday starting early, and me and five Mexican fellows, and most of them didn't speak hardly any English. And lunchtime rolled around, and he sent one of the younger men somewhere to buy them lunch, which is fine, I don't care. And they get back to lunch, and they say, hey, you want to eat with us? Sure. You know, so he gives me a burrito with everybody else. And you know, we sit down in a room, all sitting around there, and you know, I bow my head and say my prayer. And, you know, I have no idea what they thought. I couldn't speak enough. They couldn't speak enough English to tell me if they had a problem with it, you know. But sit there for 30 minutes and listen to them communicate one with another in another language. And I actually kind of enjoyed it. But we never know. But my question is, are we living zealous enough to make the difference? We spend a lot of time and effort and energy in this local reaching out to the rest of the world. Going to Mexico and Honduras and Canada, and we go to Washington. Some people go to Africa and India, and it's awesome. It's a great thing. Okay, and really a half a dozen or so, a dozen guys do all that. You know, all of us help because we contribute money and support. But I got a question for you. There's 100 of us typically in this room. Word must have got out I was preaching tonight. It's not very full. About 100 of us in this room, not counting those gentlemen, we live in a city of 5 million people. Okay? Take one or two guys, they can go halfway around the planet. And in a few years, we got 4,000 or 5,000 members. But there's 100 witnesses, 100 evangelists, if you would, that can evangelize our neighbor or our friend, our relative. I just want to make a thought in your mind that we need to be reaching out to the world around us. We can't be embarrassed of who we are. We can't be ashamed of the gospel that's been given us. If you go to a play group with your friends, with the other kids, take the opportunity. You know, I look at two or three guys here that work at the city or the school district or, you know, and I'm like my wife, her teacher this year is probably glad to get rid of her at the end of the year. You know, she's talked to her all year about the gospel. You know, a little bit at a time. Who knows if anything will ever happen. But slowly by slowly, we'll see a difference if we're diligent. So I'm going to lay a challenge out before you. You know, we go to youth camp and we have all these inspirational talks with the young people and we want to challenge them to do better. I'm going to give you a challenge. Invite somebody to church. If you live on 30th Street or 29th Place, this doesn't count. Go next door and invite somebody to church. If you live on those streets and the next door neighbors already come to church, that doesn't count. But find someone. Someone you work with. Someone you know. Be prepared for rejection. It's all right, though. There's 4,999,000 more in town. Keep inviting. Keep reaching out. And the thing I find is when I'm in that mindset, I'm also in the mindset to make sure I watch what I'm doing. That my example is good. Don't be ashamed of what you believe. The gospel of Christ will stand on its own merit. You don't own it. You're just the messenger. I better keep moving here. Holy moly. I'm going to pull Hubert here and say, oh, I'm just getting started. Let's keep moving here on 3rd Nephi in the 12th chapter this time. And we're going to look at right across the page from where you were in the 33rd verse. And it says, and this is the commandment, repent all the ends of the earth and come unto me and be baptized in my name and ye and in my name that ye may be sanctified by the reception of the Holy Ghost, that ye may stand spotless before me at the last day. Of course, this is Christ speaking. Verily, verily, I say unto you, this is my gospel, and ye know the things which ye must do in my church, for the works which ye have seen me do, that shall ye do. And that which ye have seen me do, even that shall ye do. Therefore, if ye do these things, blessed are ye, for ye shall be lifted up at the last day. Obviously, I could spend the next 2 hours here going over a list of stuff that the Lord would expect us to do. But we've all been here before. We pretty much know what's expected of us. And I thought that was a good verse that the Lord himself spoke and said, you know, in my church, do the things which you've seen me do. Let's look in Matthew, the 24th chapter. Verse 12. It says, and because of iniquity shall the love of many shall wax cold, but he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this is the gospel of the kingdom, which shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then the end shall come. Careful, I'm going to go for the soapbox here. I thought I lost my glasses. I need my glasses to find my glasses. In verses 12 through 14 there in Matthew, our commission. Do we understand that? In the previous verse there in the third book of Nephi, he said, you know what to do. Do the things that you've seen Christ do. You know that. Most of us, as I look in this room, we've been at this our whole life. We've been raised in the church. We've been in Sunday school and youth camp. We've heard sermon after sermon. We know what the Lord expects of us. So somehow, some way, we have to take these words from the weakness of man, the words that are written on a page, and put them to use in our life. And I believe, here comes the soapbox part, I believe not just put them to use in our life, but be zealous about it. live with a zealous attitude, excited. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Someone may have to run up here and kick the box out from underneath me. 14th verse, and it says, "And thus the gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then the end shall come." Okay, I don't see that has happened yet. I don't think the gospel has been preached in all the world. So for now, I'm going to quit worrying about the end coming and get on about the work that's at hand. We can sit here and look at every little thing that happens on the planet. Of course, in this day and age, you know, if something happens halfway around the world in 30 seconds, we'll know about it. We can worry about everything. Oh, the end is coming, the end is coming. We just turned into Chicken Little. The sky is falling. Okay? That's not the witness I want to have. That's not the attitude that I want to live in, is that, oh, woe is me, the end is coming. Better go find a cave to hide in. No. I say, get a fire built under it. Get out there into the world. Rub elbows with people around you. Not for the sake of becoming like them, but for the sake that they could become like you. That the message of the gospel might be heard to the people in Phoenix, Arizona. To the people in my family. To my next door neighbor. Well, I think my neighbor already heard, but maybe the one across the fence there. Do I think we live in the last days? Yes, I do. Okay. I think that the words, and the more I read the words and the things that Christ spoke and the prophecies that were given, we're given that we might know what era of time we live in. Not that we'll set and fret about, is it tomorrow or the next day? It doesn't matter. If you're doing what you should be doing, if you're living the gospel, if you're doing good to all men, if you're keeping yourself unspotted from the world, it doesn't matter if the Lord comes tomorrow or if I get hit by a bus tomorrow. The results are the same. I'm going to stand before Him. It doesn't matter if I'm living the way I should be. So if we got something to worry about, I would say it would be our life. How are we living? Who are we? Which happens actually is another one of my sections here if we get to it. Let's look in Mark, the 16th chapter. It's going to be a similar verse to what we just read. Mark 16:15. It says, "And he said," meaning Christ, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And he that believes and is baptized shall be, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. And he that believeth not shall be damned. And the signs shall follow the believers. In my name shall they cast out devils. And they shall speak with new tongues, and they shall speak, they shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them, and they shall lay hands on the sick, and they shall recover." That sounds like a pretty good thing. That sounds like a part of the gospel that I want to focus on. To reach out to the people around us, to preach the gospel. To every creature, to every person we run into. You know, there's a guy at St. Joe's. I think he's Hispanic. He's kind of slow. I don't know what's wrong with him. He's a housekeeper. And his name's Curtis. And he talks kind of slow and stuff, you know. But every time I see him, Bill, he's pushing a garbage thing. He's kind of dirty and stuff. But every time, "Hey, how's it going?" "All right." He's actually kind of a nice guy, you know. And he'll stop and talk to people. Guess what? He needs to hear the gospel just like everybody else. It's not just the people we choose. "Oh, I have this really good friend. I think I'll talk to him about the church." It's the bum sleeping in the gutter down here Christ said he came for the sick, for those who trouble. I considered, again, this is another soapbox issue for me. I've considered why. What motivates us? What should motivate us to preach the gospel? What should motivate us to not be complacent? Any help out there? Somebody want to throw a idea, your own idea? What should motivate us? Brother Jay, what motivates you to leave your house and leave your family and go down somewhere else that the chairs are hard and the food is not necessarily good? And why? I would say that that's got to be first. A love for God's creation. A love for people. We have to have a love for the gospel. Do you think it does any good? Go talk to other people and preach the gospel in other places. Does that bring value to them? Absolutely. Absolutely. Years ago, Jay and I, and I don't know, Jay probably remembers, but Jay and I was in Honduras. And I'd never been there before, and it was a little bit overwhelming because it was very, very poor. Very poor. And we was walking down this dirt road, I don't know how far. And I was thinking, and I'm sure Jay was, but you know, neither one was saying anything. And thinking, and I thought, and later I mentioned to Jay, if a guy had $1 billion and gave it to Honduras, it wouldn't change a thing. They need the gospel. God, the gospel of Christ transforms people and their attitudes and their ability to make decisions and helps them in their life physically. If I'm making good decisions, I'm not wasting my money, if I'm being faithful to my family, if I'm willing to work and have these attributes as of a believer, that helps me in my life physically. One of my favorite verses, Christ said that he came to bring life and what? Anybody? Life more abundantly. The life more abundant is now. He came to bring life eternal, but he came to bring life more abundantly. And most of us who have lived away from the church, who have had times in our life that we thought we were doing all right, and then lived with the gospel in our life, it's easy for us to see. It's easy for us to see. I have a brother, some of you know him, most of you probably don't, and I'm not going to say too much about him. I don't get along with him at all. I don't hate him by any means, but he's an individual who needs the gospel, would make a change in his life for good, would influence his ability to make reasonable decisions. I know some of you go downtown, some of you work downtown, and I see people. I see a young man the other day standing on the street corner with a sign, you know, hungry, homeless, whatever. I say a young man, I mean, it could have been Andrew, that age group in there, you know, and he looked to be in pretty good shape. He didn't make one decision that got him there. He made a whole group of bad decisions that put him there. He needs the gospel in his life. And just because one of us bring it to him doesn't mean he's going to take it. But it's our job to take it to him. He needs the gospel. Christ himself in red letters said, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And if they believe and are baptized, they'll be saved. And if they don't, they'll be damned." That's their decision. It's not ours. Who I share the gospel with really shouldn't be my decision. It's everybody. Every person. I'm here to tell you, I rub elbows with a lot of people. A lot of people at St. Joe's. Or wherever I'm working. It's just the nature of my business. People that are working for me and people I'm working for. I don't share the gospel with them. I don't take the 5 minutes or the 5 seconds to say something. We need to be more diligent and live with passion, not complacency. Let's look at Matthew in the 24th chapter. I don't know if I already read that one or not. I did. I read that one, my last section. I'm sorry. How about 1 Nephi 3:19? First Nephi, chapter 3, verse 19. Another part of the commission. I'm going to tell you a little struggle I have sometimes. I'm a guy who walks fast, who talks fast, and who moves on. Probably Jared understands exactly where I'm going with this. And I'll walk a carpenter into a room, say, I need that door removed from there, infill it, put sheetrock on it, tape it, store the door over here, do this, do that, I'll see you. Gone. May not see me for 4 or 5 hours. Okay. And I come back 2 or 3 hours later, and I'm thinking, well, what's the problem here? You know, that's not what I told you to do. Communication. We have to be good communicators. We have to be able to understand what it is we're supposed to do. And sometimes I get a little frustrated at some of these guys that work for me, and then I'll leave and I'm walking down the hall, mulling this over my mind, thinking, I just need to get rid of this guy and get somebody else. I'm tired of this. You know, no, I need to learn how to communicate better. He's only half the equation. I'm the other half. Okay. He can't do it if he doesn't understand what it is that he's supposed to do. Today, here, I hope that each of us understands what our commission is, what it is we're supposed to do in life. Become wealthy and pass it on to your children is not it. If that happens along the way, great, I have no problem with it. But that's not the commission. To enjoy life and take 42 vacations a year, not it. It's not about you. It's not about me. The Lord has given us something. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Verse 19, chapter 3, First Nephi. Or in fine, after the Gentiles have received the fullness of the gospel, the natural branches of the olive tree, or the remnant of the house of Israel shall be grafted in, or come to a knowledge of the truth of the Messiah, their Lord and their Redeemer. And after this manner of language, my father did prophesy and speak unto her brothers. We have a responsibility to take the gospel to the house of Israel. We don't know where they're all at, for one. So that's the Lord will have to make sure that we do that. But we have to be willing. We have to be able. If I'm so deep in debt that I can't go anywhere, I'm not able. If I don't know my scriptures, my heart's really somewhere else, I'm not able. If all I want to do in life is for me, I'm not able. Okay. If I have a bad attitude about some of those people in the house of Israel, I'm not going to be able. Part of our commission is to take the gospel back to the house of Israel. And I thought of this, and of course, most of us, I believe, in this room feel like that some of our brothers and sisters in Mexico are probably part of this, you know. Possibly now some of our brothers in Africa might be a part of this. It could be in the process. The question is, are we doing our part? I don't know now because there's been such a large amount leave the nation and go back to Israel, but at one time, more Jewish people lived in America than in Israel. I don't know if that's still true or not, but there's a lot of them here. We've met several who actually embrace Jesus Christ. We have opportunity, an opportunity to be a part of the fulfilling of that very scripture. That we would receive the gospel and we would take it again to the house of Israel. I hope that our commission or our instructions, you're not like some of my carpenters out there that when I walk out of the room are going, what did he say? What did he want me to do? I hope that our focus, our view is clear. We cannot be successful if we don't know what the job is. Jesse went to work in the morning and his boss said, here, go over there across the airport and fix those four trucks. Jesse looks over there and he sees 30 trucks sitting there. It's like, whoa, I'm one. Boss leaves and he's like, well, what do I do, you know? It wasn't clear. It's not clear. And for each of us, that may be a little narrower or a little broader, whatever description that you put to that. But the point is, like I said, what was my very first thing? I'd like you to think. I want you to think. Are you truly living with passion? Are you passionate about taking the gospel to those of Phoenix, Arizona, to the house of Israel, to the Indian people, to whoever? They're all God's children. We don't have to be selective. Just find someone and start talking. Start reaching out. Prepare yourself to do so. Okay, we're going to move on to the next section. If we're going to do this thing that I'm talking about, if I'm going to carry my soapbox, it can be a pretty big bag to carry around with me all the time. If I'm going to carry my soapbox down the street, and opportune times, throw it out there and jump up on top of it and start proclaiming the gospel, which is what I'm talking about tonight. What do they see? Who is that guy? You know, does my life, what image do I have? Is it of honesty? Is it integrity? Is it being fair? Or am I living for myself? Am I advertising one thing and saying another? Let's think about this. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 11. The gospel to us has to become who we are. Not just something that we do. We gain our identity from different things. You know, it'd be easy here for Adam and some of the other ones in this room to say, hi, Adam. Who are you, Adam? Well, I'm a police officer. People can identify with that right away, can't they? I'm a police officer. Or I'm a construction superintendent or whatever it is, you know. Wrong answer. We should be identified as being a servant to all people. We should be identified as being a child of the Lord, first and foremost. I happen to be a superintendent or a project manager. That's what I make money at. That's not who I am. But sadly to say, most days, that's exactly who I am. I put my hard hat on and I walk into a building and people know exactly who I am. Oh, that's it. He's a superintendent for so-and-so. And when I walk into a meeting, they expect me to speak. Give them the answers. Give them the direction. Explain the schedule. Whatever it is. So it's easy for me to gain my identity that way. But it's not right. Let's look in Isaiah chapter 2, verse 11. It says, lofty looks of a man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the man shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted. The day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon every one that is proud and lofty, and upon every one that is lifted up, and he shall be brought low. Let's jump down to the 17th verse. And it says, the lofty man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. This is not the day we live in that the Lord alone is exalted, is it? I look at people, again, with my natural man, my critical eye, and I wonder sometimes, do they realize what they're doing? Do they recognize that they're a walking billboard for something? You know, we got guys that work for us covered, literally covered with tattoos from head to toe. Well, not from head to toe, but arms and chest and neck. And there was a guy here that shot a bunch of people over here in Mesa this last weekend, or last week. And I seen his picture. He got a tattoo for each eyebrow, big tattoo on his neck, a goatee tattooed on. All are very symbolic, by the way, if any of you look into it, to who he is. He is a walking billboard. He's advertising something very loudly. And he's proud of it. I mean, that's what he wants to be advertising. But for you and I, are we a walking billboard for the Lord? I'm not saying go down and get a tattoo that I love Jesus on my forehead here, okay? But I am saying, are we in our actions, in our way we communicate, in how we treat people? Do people see the Lord in us? If I'm going to get on that soapbox and I'm going to start proclaiming the gospel to everybody I run into, then I got to live it. It's got to be me. Because someone else with their critical eye is going to very quickly see my faults. Very quickly say, oh, you're saying one thing and doing something else. I had a conversation with a painter. I think it was last Thursday afternoon, evening late. They were supposed to be in my job, this guy and his son, and they didn't show up. So one of my guys and myself were up there painting this lobby. And here they come. They finally show up. And I was like, oh, I'm glad to see you guys here. Well, I stayed and painted for a while. And the guy got to talk to me, and he's a long-distance relative of Senator Flake, and on and on and on. And, of course, I realized right away an LDS connection there. And so I asked him about it. Oh, no. Nope, I'd never have anything to do with that. Well, that's kind of weird. He said, and then they cut me out of the family for it. I'm not much to do with the family because of it. But his whole reasoning behind it was his grandfather said one thing and did something else. I'm not saying the guy was right, but that soured him on that belief. No different than you and I. If we want to proclaim to our friends and our relatives and the people we run into the gospel, we got to live it. We can't say one thing and then in our unsuspecting time say or do something else. I lose my temper. I lose my temper sometimes. I try and keep it in check, but there's days I just lose it. Well, that's not really a good example at that moment. We have to live it. What's our image? It's a question I want you to ask yourself. What image do you portray? Is it one about me? Fancy clothes, big diamond rings, important looks, expensive suits, fancy vehicles, I don't know, whatever. Is that the image we want to portray? Or is it, as Isaiah here said, you know, the proud man is going to be brought low. He's going to be made humble. Let's look in 1 Corinthians, the second chapter. First Corinthians, the second chapter. I'm going to start in verse 9. Excuse me. I want you to think about this. These words are words you've heard a bazillion times. And I'm going to read half a dozen verses here. It says, it is written, I hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither hath it entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. As I go about my daily walk, is this on my heart? When I'm struggling, I'm frustrated, I got more work on my desk. I have a new saying in life. I'm so far behind, I think I'm first. I'm that far back in the pack that everybody else has just about lapped me. And in my workload, to the point you just want to give up, you know. And when I'm struggling in that daily struggle, am I thinking about this? It really doesn't matter, because God's prepared something greater for me than I can imagine. 10th verse. But God hath revealed them unto us by the Spirit. For the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. And what man knoweth the things of man, save the spirit of man which is in him? Even so, the things of God are known no man but the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit of God, that we might know the things that are given freely, that are freely given to us of God, which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teacheth, but which God, which the Holy Ghost teacheth, comparing spiritual things to spiritual. But the natural man receiveth not these things, for the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But he that is spiritual judge all things, yet he himself is judged of no man. What is this saying to us? What's Paul trying to say here? He's saying, if you're going to live spiritually, if you want to know what the Lord has for you to do, if you're willing to take your soapbox and head down the street and proclaim the gospel a little person at a time, one person at a time. I was talking to a brother the other day, and I talked to him a little bit about the very fact that we live in this huge city and we just are not really reaching out to anybody successfully. And he said, I just don't know how you do it. One person at a time. That's how you do it. One person at a time. If there's 100 people in this room, and every one of us talk to one person in a week, that's 100 people a week. We could go through 5 million people pretty quick. But we have to get about it. We have to be living it. We have to have it in our image, our countenance. We have to know that there's something greater. I've talked to my sons about this over the years. You know, what is it that we have that makes it worthwhile to share? You know, we all know people that live in a nice house and have a nice car and have a nice family and do pretty good in life. They don't have any regard for the Lord. They're not bad people. They just don't have regard for the Lord. You know, and you look at them and you look at me. Maybe I'm driving an old truck and have my struggles in life, and I'm going to go to them and say, hey, I got some good news for you. Does that make sense? It does, because it's not about me. It's not about what I have or what they have. We see millionaires all the time ending up in jail, killing themselves, getting in trouble with drugs, whatever it is. Why? Because they have everything and that makes them happy? We have an opportunity to share a message that brings happiness and contentment and peace to life. But it has to be in us to start with. And it's in us by the Spirit of God. Not by ourselves. By the Spirit of the Lord. Let's go to 1 Corinthians there in the 3rd chapter. And start in 16th verse. It's one more thing I just want to talk about, because it's in this same realm of what we're thinking about. 16th verse, and it says, know ye that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you. If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. Can we look at ourselves that way? That I'm the temple of the Lord because He dwells in me? So where I go, what I do, what movie I sit down and watch, what company I keep, is there a spot there? I mean, the Lord's sitting there with me. I'm His temple. He's traveling with me. Am I defiling this temple? And I don't even want to go into that discussion of what all that may mean. But think about it. Think about it. We can successfully, this little handful of people can successfully live our life according to the gospel. We can successfully rid ourselves of a lot of heartache that the world suffers through because of the lack of the gospel. And we can successfully climb up on our own soapbox, no different than those guys did back in the 1800s, and proclaim the gospel. I'm going to issue that challenge again. Bring somebody to church, a friend, a relative, a neighbor. Might be a little uncomfortable. Well, they don't know I believe in the Book of Mormon. Tell them. It's okay. They may say no. Well, it's okay. At least they know. Next time you ask them, they'll know that time. Tell them. The gospel doesn't belong to you. You're just a caretaker. So take it out there. I challenge you to bring people to church. It might be uncomfortable for us on a Sunday morning. A little bit crowded in here. Oh, gee, here's 6 or 7 visitors. Here's 10 visitors. Might have to scoot over and let them sit down. Wouldn't that be a nice problem to have? Don't treat them like they're a stranger, though. Everybody's job to reach out to people, make them feel comfortable. Share God's love with them. That's the thing that changes people. I can't change anybody. I'm just a tongue-twisted old hillbilly. Share the love of Jesus Christ. Thank you.